The Playlist with Ben and Fiona.
What do I stand for? What are my beliefs? Like, I'm confused now.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I manage our online coverage of movies and TV here at SBS, and I'm joined by my co-host, SBS Channel Manager, Ben Nguyen. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Fee. How are you recovering post-US election?
Oh, look, I went in deep. I went, transfixed to CNN and other American news providers. So, look, I haven't quite caught up on my sleep, to be honest. So, let's see how this goes. How are you?
I feel the same way. A friend of the show, John Boehm, our colleague at SBS, described himself as having CNN jet lag, and I feel somewhat the same. I think a lot of late night shifts, you know, waiting for those votes to come in bit by bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Transfixed to movable TV screen board things with reporting on counties in Georgia that I didn't even know existed, but now I'm fully aware of and fully across preferences and whatnot. That's a good way to put it. And said friend of the show, Mr. John Boehm, also put me onto a service that split screen four news channels at once. So, yeah, it was I could see through time.
For the full experience.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, well, this week on The Playlist, we will be having a chat about political coverage in the media, including ABC's flagship current affairs program, Four Corners, which made waves this week inside the Canberra bubble. Fee, you'll be speaking to the stars of Luca Guadagnino's first TV series, We Are Who We Are. And Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant tell one another big little lies in new drama, The Undoing, as well as a few picks of what to watch for NAIDOC Week on SBS On Demand.
Quite a mixed bag. Let's get into it.
Why don't we start, Fee, with We Are Who We Are. Do you want to tell us a bit about the show? And I know that you spoke to two of the stars this week.
Yep, they're coming up. This, as you say, is Luca Guadagnino's first TV series. You'd be familiar with his work through, his best known film is Call Me By Your Name, Oscar nominated, but also A Bigger Splash, I Am Love, and Suspiria. He verged into horror there. So he does these really stylized mood pieces. So
yeah,
that's kind of how I describe his movies. Like, they're a mood and they're all about the character, less so than plot. I mean, things happen, of course, but it's just this, you're immersed in these moods and these moments and locations and costumes. And it's really sets up a world that you then just throw yourself into. So what's this one about? Well, it's set in Italy. Luca Guadagnino is Italian, and most of his films are in Italy. And it's 2016, importantly, and it's a story of American kids who live on a US Army base in Italy. So for all intents and purposes, they're in America because they've got supermarkets that are stocked with American products. So to give that a familiarity of being in America, but they're very much not in America because they're in Italy. So it's already there's a bit of displacement there for these characters, but it's just walking in the shoes of these teenagers, dealing with that, dealing with identity, dealing with sex, just teenage story, but with all of these other things going on. And being in 2016, there's a looming election of you-know-who that is sort of on the sidelines of the story as well.
And obviously a sort of teen coming-of-age drama requires a couple of really strong young actors, and you had a chance to speak to the stars of the show.
Yeah, correct. And they are teenagers. This isn't Beverly Hills 90210 where it's 30-year-olds playing teenagers. Now we've got Jack Dylan Grazer, who you would know as the kid from It, one of the kids from It, the remake.
Shazam, too. He was sort of the funny buddy.
Correct, yes, which I've not seen. So, yes, thanks for adding that in. So he's the lead. He plays Fraser with a shock of blonde hair. And one of his mums is played by Chloe Sevigny, who herself was a teenage star, coming on screen through Kids all those years ago. So it's interesting that there's the next generation here playing her son. Alice Braga is his other mum. And Jordan Christine Simon, this one's her first role, and she's, you wouldn't believe it really, but she plays Caitlin, who is this mysterious girl that Fraser becomes immediately fascinated by. And, she's contemplating transitioning, And interestingly, her dad is played by Kid Cudi, who also became famous relatively, not as a teenager, but early 20s. So what I like here is that there's, you know, there's the actors who found fame young, and then there's this next generation of younger actors.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's good casting there. Yeah, as I say, so it's not hugely plot-driven, but, yeah, it's just over the course of a summer, yeah, just grappling with a whole lot of stuff that teens have to deal with, and also what's going on at home, living on a military base, all of that's all wrapped up in here, so.
Yeah, army brats.
Exactly, yes. And fun fact, Luca Guadagnino actually references that Amy Adams was a bit of inspiration for him because that's how she grew up on army bases internationally.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, who knew?
So, well, I can't wait to hear what Jack and Jordan have to say about We Are Who We Are.
Yeah.
Why don't we have a listen?
Yes, and I'll just note, these are edited highlights of much longer conversations, and there are, you can read the longer interviews online, which I'll give you the link afterwards.
Right.
So first up, we're going to hear from Jordan Christine Simon, who plays Caitlin. Here she is.
Thank you. Thank you again for your time.
Yeah, sure.
I would love to ask, what was it about Caitlin? Sort of what did you know about her, and what did you kind of embellish, I guess? What was it about her that made her stand out for you?
Initially the character blurb, I could really relate to it. It's described Caitlin as a tomboy, and Caitlin does a lot of things that are, I don't know if you would say unconventional, but not common for most 14-year-olds. And I could relate to that in a sense. I had done a lot of crazy, not crazy stuff, but my parents put me in a lot of different things. So I had done whitewater rafting, I had done archery, you know, tennis. So I was all over the place as a child, and I could just really relate to that aspect of Caitlin. And slowly but surely, as I started getting scripts and reading them and learning a little bit more about Caitlin, I became more and more interested just in the complexity of playing this character that was so different from every other character that I've ever played, like, in my entire life.
There's a lot to her. And so, correct me if I'm wrong, this was your first on-screen. I know you've done heaps of performing, but your first actual on-screen role, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So what was it like? Talk us through that, you know, showing up for it, and what the process is like, different to the other kind of performing that you've done through life.
It's very scary, definitely. I don't know. I'm not a big attention person, so I'm not used to the attention constantly being on me. But once you get to set, a lot of people are looking at you, like, all the time. So it was very strange for me, at least, to have people like hold my umbrella and go get things for me. It was like, whoa, what's happening? Yeah. But it was really, really. I'm lucky enough to have such an amazing cast. They were so helpful and so supportive, and they really made the entire process just so easy and so, like, so relaxed, so relaxed. But it's definitely a scary process, especially when coming from theater to film. It's very different.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah. And with Luca, what's his style like with working with actors? Like, yeah,
he's very hands-on. Very hands-on. He knows what he wants. He knows exactly what he wants. And he will stop at nothing until he gets it, which I respect. He's very hardcore. You know, he doesn't mess around. But he is very lenient as well with asking us what we think and trying to get our opinions on certain things, which I always loved about him. So, yeah, he's a little bit all over the place. But, you know, what he does, it definitely works because he gets what he wants and people enjoy it. So, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Get things done. Because that's always, like, I think it works here, absolutely. But, like, I'm always intrigued when, you know, shows are about teenagers and very specifically about a teenage experience, but written by people who aren't teenagers and probably, you know, haven't been for a long time. But, you know, did he work with you on that? And, you know, you are a teenager.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what really brings a lot of the authenticity to the show. Luca was very open And so was Francesca and Paolo, the other writers of the show. Mm-hmm. They're very open to criticism, constructive criticism. I think they recognize the same thing, that they are not teenagers. You know, they have the experience and they can bring as much to the table writing and just skill level wise as they can. But they were definitely always open to asking us, hey, would you say this as a teenager? Is this how you would phrase this question? Is this how you would phrase this question? Is this something that you would do? Like, would you, as a regular person, like actually go and do that? Be like, no, I wouldn't do that. Luca, you're like, okay, we forget about it then. It's fine. We don't need it. So it was great. I think that's what really made the show super authentic, because, you know, they wrote it and they really brought it to life, but we worked on it. It was a collaborative effort for sure.
Yeah, okay. And I'd love to get your thoughts, like the specific time period that it's set in, you know, like the way politics comes in, but also doesn't, you know, I'm thinking the Red Hats make an appearance. Yeah, how much you talked about that kind of the way the time period and the location, like that distant America, but also not America, that you're living in.
It's important. I mean, like it comes in and out, you know. It's it definitely makes a statement very early on, I'd say, as to where certain characters stand. And I definitely think it gives people a lot to think about, which I love. Lets people think about how people's political views can take into account other things. And, you know, even so, not only focusing on the politics aspect of it, but also just like you said, it being in Italy, that is a total cultural difference from America or literally anywhere else. You know, it's really interesting to have everything happen there and have it be in this little bit of America in Italy. It's so complex and it's really, really cool. I think it definitely will start a lot of conversations, and it has started a lot of conversations. So I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's very layered. And also, I mean, I guess it's in the title, really. We are who we are. Like it doesn't spoon feed backstory and meaning to everything, which I appreciate. You know, it doesn't put everything out there on the table and explain everyone straight away. Yeah.
You got to figure it out yourself. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. and more with Caitlin. I mean, you know, she's questioning her identity, playing with passing. How did you research that, like to play Caitlin, all of her complexity?
I did do, textbook research, just going online and seeing and trying to get an understanding in general. More of an understanding from what I already knew. But mainly I focused on asking friends. I have friends that have gone through similar things as Caitlin and who have transitioned, identify as gender fluid, you know, all across the spectrum, which I'm so thankful for them. But I was able to talk to a lot of them and just ask, what was your experience like? You know, like who was and wasn't accepting? Like what kind of trials did you have to go through? What was it like? How did you know? You know, things like that. And I think that was more important for me, at least, getting a very authentic learning experience, I would say, rather than like a textbook. I didn't want to be one of those people that had like the textbook definition, because everybody's experience is different. And Caitlin's experience can be so different from someone else's, you know, I mean, it's all over the place. So
yeah,
it was really, really good to talk to actual people and have actual friends that can be so candid and were so comfortable talking to me and telling me about their experiences. And I was able to bring bits and pieces of that, I tried at least, into the performance.
Yeah. One thing we'd like to ask our guests when they come on the podcast, something they've been watching. Are you a big binger? Have you been watching much lately?
I am. I've been watching a lot of stuff recently. Some of the things that I've been watching have just ended, like Lovecraft Country. Just ended like last week, and I'm so upset about it because it was so great, and it was a perfect way to like end the week on my Sundays. Finished that. I've watched nearly everything on Netflix, so I'm just waiting. They're adding new stuff, so I'm just waiting for them to add new stuff. I don't even care what it is anymore now. I'll watch anything. And I watched my show. I didn't like to in the beginning, but now I look forward to it because I'm interested in seeing what other people are saying afterwards. So yeah, I'm all over the place, honestly. I watch whatever at this point. I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, I think most of us are almost getting through the entire back catalogue of Netflix too. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of time to stream. Yeah. Well, thank you so much and really congratulations on the show. It's really...
Thank you.
Yeah, so different to what else is around and, yeah, I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for talking to me.
Thanks. Yeah, all the best.
Thank you. You too. All right, be safe, all right?
You too. Okay. See you later.
So that was Jordan Christine Simon. And up next, we've got Jack Dylan Grazer, who plays Fraser.
Hi.
Hello. Lovely to meet you. Well, look, thanks for your time. First question, how soon after shooting did you dye your hair back?
Actually, I never did dye my hair back. I was offered to dye my hair back multiple times, but I never did. I cut it really short. What I did was I cut it really short, and I just had like these little tips, these little blonde tips. And it was kind of grody and scummy for a little bit. And then it grew out. And then I had barely any blonde left, but it was like my brown hair with a little bit of blonde. And then I cut the blonde tips off.
Yeah.
And now I'm all natural.
Oh, shit, the blonde. Okay. Excellent. Just got to get that out of the way. So what did you know of Luca Guadagnino's work before this? Had you seen, say, Call Me By Your Name, his big one?
Yeah, I think that's what I saw. I saw Call Me By Your Name in 2017 when it came out. Was it 2017? I think so. Yeah, when it came out. Saw it in the theater. I walked out of the theater and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm in love. I want to work with this director. Mm-hmm. And it came to fruition at some point. Like, I didn't know it would, but the stars aligned. And but I was really a fan of his work. And I when I met him too, like it came through so clearly. And it was such a privilege to work with him.
Mm. And what's his style like? Like, how did you work together? Just give us an insight into, say, with your past experience, say, with it, but with Luca, what's his way of working with actors that stands out?
Well, he's very, very collaborative, I think, or I know, and he puts us all on a very loose leash, and the communication between him and the actor is so crucial and essential, and like he really prizes that the relationship and the bond between an actor. And also he thinks, is his philosophy, I guess, is that nobody knows their character better than the actor playing them, the person walking around in their shoes every day, going to bed as them, trying to shake them off when they get home. It's like it's such an intimate relationship that you have with your character. So I mean, the writers obviously created this character, wrote the like description and dichotomy, but you're the one living with this character every day, you know? So like the script is kind of just a canvas and you're spitting out all this art onto it as the actor, which is a really cool way to view it. So I read the first 5 episodes and I was just so in awe of the work there. And I was so compelled by this, by the writing and that Luca was attached and all these things. And when I had meetings with Luca and we talked about the internalities of Fraser and his motivations and like the stresses he has and self inquiries and all these issues he faces, I had a much better understanding. And by the time I got to Italy, I was still kind of tapping into it and like spending every day as Fraser, kind of walking around the town, ordering a coffee as Fraser, kind of like in an arrogant way, like practicing the gait, like walking around the streets of this little small town we started off in called Abano Terme. And, I really like had to delve into the character. I had no other choice but to surrender to this feeling of like displacement as Fraser.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you were living it firsthand, weren't you? So yeah, tell us about that experience of shooting over there and how that helped build up this idea of the show.
I think the show, it wouldn't be like unique if it wasn't in Italy. There's something about Italian culture melded with like the ignorance of America that's kind of just like elegant or something. And it's a beautiful thing. And especially Italy, like it was my first time working in Italy and first time working in Europe. Like, and so that was just so awesome to be there and do what I love to do and play pretend and live out loud with this character. It was just so much fun. And also the culture I love. Yeah, really, really unique to me.
Mm. And it plays differently now, I guess. Like, you know, it's going to be a long time before certainly we can go to Italy. So, like, it's nice as a travelogue as well. And with shows like this, like I'm always interested when, you know, it's a show very specifically about teenage experience written by people who aren't teenagers anymore, have been, but aren't anymore. I guess you touched on it, but yeah, how conscious is Luca of that and the writers in wanting to draw in your own interpretations? And did you change much? Did you suggest a few things that maybe wouldn't work in?
I feel kind of out of line doing something like that. I mean, I obviously make my suggestions or like ideas that I have, but I leave it up to the director to direct me, you know. Like I'm not gonna be like, no, that's wrong. Like if he tells me the end, it's the end all thing. It's the end. It's the that's like the verdict. Yeah. So I'm not gonna argue with that. But me and Luca had a lot of ideas together, and we really put our heads together throughout the entire duration of the shoot. And we're always talking. It was always a conversation before any scene. There was always a conversation. It wasn't just like we jumped into it blindly. There was always a conversation being had, and it made it a lot more of a comfortable experience, I'd say.
Yeah. And what kind of stuff will you take away? Kind of what have you learned on that, from that experience, that you'll apply, you know, for upcoming
so
roles?
Much. Yeah. So much. I came back from Italy such a changed person. I think in the best way possible, but like more informed, more enlightened about the diversity of the world and of feelings and of self-expression. Because before I was kind of felt maybe like, I don't know if I ever, like I would see people like Fraser in my daily life beforehand, but I was just like, okay, I know those kind of people are kind of weird. I don't really need to like dissect those, like the mentalities of those people, but then to step into the shoes of that kind of person and really understand them and like their motives and their motivations and why they feel the way they feel really, really gave me a look and a better understanding of those kind of people and of just people overall. And made me understand myself better as well and my capabilities as an actor and also just like why I feel the things I feel.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. It's not a bad thing, is it? And with the show, what I think it does so well is, you know, it doesn't spoon feed backstory and information at you.
Yeah.
And especially with the way it deals with politics, you know, it's very specifically in 2016 when it starts. And there's, you know, there's the ubiquitous red hat makes some appearances, but it doesn't try to overly explain people are like this because they vote this way. And what did you... Did you speak with Luca about that at all? Sort of the way politics comes in but isn't at the forefront of the show?
Not necessarily. I don't know if I really talked. I had a conversation with Luca about that. I mean, yeah, probably at some point, but I know that what he was aiming for was like, well, it takes place during 2016 before Donald Trump was elected, which I think is brilliant. And it kind of shows these people. And that was a time, not only politically, but just socially, everybody was kind of, I guess, confused, wandering, both internal and external. It was kind of a mix up of a time, and we're kind of having a feeling of reflection of that kind of right now, I feel, in America.
Yeah.
But then I remember in 2016 that it was kind of like, it was a lot of these self, like people and all over America, kind of the self-inquiry of like, what do I stand for? What are my beliefs? Like, I'm confused now because like of some kind of buffoonery balancing it. Weird. It's weird. and I think that capitalizes both on the political side and also just like on the emotional side of these characters. They're all kind of feeling very tilted on this tilted axis, not really knowing why they feel the way they feel. But then by the end of it, you know, these answers are somewhat solved or like resolved. And I think that it's maybe even symbolic that it takes place in 2016 rather than now.
Now it's out in the world and people are seeing it and responding to it. What are some of the best takes that you've heard? Like what's some of the reception like that you're personally taking to heart?
I love hearing people say that they can't decide whether they love or hate Fraser. And that's kind of something that I battled with for a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Is that like, God, this guy's an asshole. Like how is he supposed to be likable and he's a protagonist? But here's the cool thing is that like I've come to this conclusion too as a storyteller is that like you don't need to like the main character to like the story. You don't need to like the person to like the story they're telling or the story they're in. But also not only that is that like he's human. I think these things, these like these factors, these elements of him make him more human. If he was just this perfect persona, there would be no, I would feel no sympathy or empathy, honestly, like, or sad even, like if he was just like a sad guy, underdog, something conventional, it would be like, okay, yeah. I mean, I guess I can kind of, it's kind of relatable, but he's also not looking for relatability. Something cool about Luke is that he's never, it's never his goal to gratify the audience, it's to inform the audience. And the voyeuristic aspect and the voyeuristic like approach to how he conducts like his filmmaking is that like, it's like capturing all of these human emotions and like all of these human emotions on the spectrum of human emotions from like the lowest to the highest and in between. It's really is like a, it's such a spectacle. And especially Fraser, like, I feel like he's something that like you recognize somewhere from before, but it's also like this new thing, which makes it fresh and interesting to watch.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you so much. It's been a real treat to talk to you. And like I say, yeah, congratulations on the show. Stay well.
Thank you so much, Fiona.
Thanks a lot. See you, Jack.
Good everyone.
So that's Jack Dylan Grazer and Jordan Christine Simon, who play Fraser and Caitlin, the stars of We Are Who We Are. All episodes are available now on SBS On Demand. So, Fee, you mentioned We Are Who We Are takes place in 2016. That was obviously the time of the last US election. We've just been through another election, looking like it's had different results.
Not if you ask the current occupant of the White House, though, sadly. Still litigating it, but yes.
Yes, at the time of recording, there has been, at this point, no concession made. But
or clearly, whenever you're listening to this, I'm not expecting one to happen. So play this in 10 years' time and the, yeah.
But clearly, you know, the way that our media acts as they say in the US, the fourth estate, and attempts to hold, you know, speak truth to power and hold power to account, you know, that has all been in the spotlight in the last week.
Correct. Well, of course, there was the debate about Fox calling Arizona first for Biden and not for Trump, which apparently sparked off a whole bunch of phone calls between the occupant of the White House and Rupert Murdoch and who knows else. So, yeah, it's about like the idea of who's going to call it. And then the reluctance for anyone to call the actual result based on ongoing dribs and drabs of postal votes that absolutely had to be counted. So, yes, there was this pressure on, let's say, CNN to call it because a lot of people just wanted to wanted to have it over with. But, of course, they were very reluctant to go first and call it when there were still votes coming in, totally understandably. But also as someone riveted and staring at it all weekend with never-changing electoral vote numbers on my screen, I was eager to know the outcome as well. And then, of course, I was asleep when they finally did call it.
Yeah, well, speaking of calls between leaders and those in the media, I imagine that there's been a flurry of calls, you know, closer to home here in Australia over the last few days. Not only have we seen two former prime ministers, Kevin Rudd and Malcolm Turnbull, leading the charge around the Murdoch press and the way that their editorial take on the goings-on in Parliament. So there's sort of echoes of the US there. But also Four Corners this week took a story inside the Canberra bubble about the particular way that two in particular members of the government had been acting in office, and that led to a whole level of scrutiny into the way that the ABC itself operates.
Yeah. Nice segue, by the way, to talk about Four Corners. But no, it's right. There were, you know, this episode of Four Corners that occurred on Monday night inside the Canberra bubble, it was called. Yeah, had all this pre-publicity, I'll call it, in that, you know, there were talks of accusations of political interference, et cetera. And it was the hot topic at a Senate Estimates Committee hearing on Monday afternoon, which certainly made me more inclined to watch it to find out what is it, what's in it.
Definitely.
And if you weren't aware of the term, the Streisand effect, it was the Streisand effect, a nod to actions by Barbara Streisand a few years ago, suing kind of a local council for putting the photo of her Malibu mansion online, and in so doing, making sure that a hell of a lot more people looked at the photo of her Malibu mansion online, therefore amplifying. Anyway.
Love a Babs reference.
Exactly. Never not quoting Babs. yes. What was the question?
Well, I think that let's sort of go to the substance of the program.
Yeah, 100%.
Which was about the way that two ministers and senior members of the government had behaved while they were in Canberra, away from their families, that they had carried on affairs with staffers. And it has ignited a bit of a debate across the media about whether this story was appropriate to tell. Is the private lives of our public officials fair game? But I think the program dug into something more than that.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. Speaking about all that pre-publicity, I had seen references to, you know, the quote-unquote bonking ban, and that it was going to be talking about some, you know, scandalous things that might be a little bit, oh, wow, I can't believe they're going there. And, you know, there was a bit of that, let's be real. But also the broader theme was about toxic workplace culture and just sort of the suggestion that Canberra has a quote-unquote women problem. You know, the misogyny speech isn't even a decade old. Just about power imbalances in the workplace, and this workplace happens to be Parliament House. Yeah, that was all in there, which is, it was a really fascinating episode that I hope leads to conversations about workplace culture, because there were some really brave, certainly one really brave woman speaking up about her own experience, and some accounts that are really upsetting to hear. So just the idea of the power, I guess. It's not just about affairs and bonking behind the scenes. It's about what's the ratio of power in these relationships if they're happening, and the whole idea around consent and such. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was interesting seeing this coming sort of hot off the heels of what we've learnt about the New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, who her personal life has come under the spotlight recently within the Independent Commission Against Corruption. And that itself has become a subject of debate, you know, about sort of whether is that a legitimate subject for media attention.
Yeah.
There's questions there of her own privacy, yes, but there's also questions about her judgment, and there are questions, legitimate questions, about corruption. But in that case, I would really distinguish between that case and those we saw on Four Corners, because the power imbalance here, when people owe their employment directly to, you know, in most cases, the man that they're working for. Mm. And there's clearly an issue about work-life balance for those who do work in Parliament. And so I think that having an understanding of how people may or may not abuse the position that they're in is a subject for fair scrutiny.
Yeah. Going back to what you were saying about the New South Wales experience, I think like just the idea of politicians and their private lives and what's off limits, I think, is the kind of broader examination, I guess, that has been happening in the last couple of months. No, this one is more about the relative power between the parties, yeah.
Well, the ABC itself has become politicised, I think it's fair to say, in the way it goes about its business scrutinising government. And you know, Four Corners has a incredible track record in terms of launching royal commissions and you know, having real consequences for the investigations that they have done. And they really do play a very important role for our democracy. And I mean, you mentioned earlier Senate estimates, and clearly we know this working for a public broadcaster, there is a tension in the fact that you do have a role of holding government to account, and yet you are also funded by that very same government.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that there is an acute awareness of that. Yeah, I think so. So I would also add the episode of Q&A that followed Four Corners carried on those themes, and shout out to SBS's own former employee Jan Fran, who was on that and was pretty fantastic there. But yeah, it just kind of examined the aftermath of the episode. It literally just aired. And yes, I imagine that green room would have been pretty wild to be in as people were watching the episode go to air. So yes, you're right. So it's not only doing the story, but then reporting on the story you've done. Yeah, it's a tricky line to walk, but supporting the content and ensuring the editorial independence of those reporting, having the support to have a buffer from any, you know, alleged interference is really important in order to tell the stories, yeah.
Well, I'd encourage anyone who didn't catch Inside the Canberra Bubble on Four Corners to check it out on ABC iView, and you can make a decision for yourself whether it passes the public interest test.
Pub test. So now we are at the part of the show we call What Have You Been Watching, in which we talk about other things we've been watching. And I confess, not much on my front. It's all been news and current affairs.
A lot of maps.
A lot of maps, a lot of precinct
maps. Yeah, a lot of zooming in on maps.
And staring at my phone on Twitter, making jokes about Four Seasons Total Landscaping, which will never get old. If you have any more jokes that I haven't seen, please send them my way.
We need an expose on that is what we need.
I will read it. And I want the 10
Someone is going to make that documentary.
Absolutely. And I hope you buy it for your channel, Ben. And we'll talk about it on this. future content. Anyway, that's me. Not much is my answer. So I put the question to you. What have you been watching?
Yeah, well, a couple of years ago, HBO had a water cooler hit with Big Little Lies, with writer David E. Kelly adapting a, by all accounts, mediocre novel by Leanne Moriarty, set on Sydney's northern beaches, into a star-studded affair about mostly waspy mums in Monterey, California, and the various secrets and lies that begin to emerge once a scandal erupts across the schoolyard. The show netted star and producer Nicole Kidman acting Emmys and Golden Globes and spawned a mostly unnecessary second season, notable only for Meryl Streep's icy mother-in-law from hell, and the off-screen creative battles between first and second season directors Jean-Marc Vallée and Andrea Arnold. In any case, much of the gang have reformed and attempted to recreate the magic.
The community is in shock tonight over the gruesome discovery of a fourth grade mother found bludgeoned to death.
In HBO's The Undoing, David E. Kelly writes, Nicole Kidman stars, and this time Danish director Suzanne Beer directs this tale of waspy mums at an elite New York City school and the drama that erupts within this seemingly perfect family, with Kidman as kind-hearted therapist Dr. Grace Fraser, Hugh Grant as her jocular British oncologist husband Dr. Jonathan Fraser.
You know what I love about this? You could never tell they were rich. It's all so classy and understated.
I'll make it up to you later.
Make it up to me now. Let's find a room. They must have a few.
Donald Sutherland as Kidman's father and Noah Jupe as glum child Henry. A sexy foreign school mum prone to popping a boob out at a school meeting or striding around naked at the local gym turns up dead. And did someone give in to their basic instinct, or was it all just a case of fatal attraction? Fia, I know you haven't had a chance to look at this.
I haven't, and that was hell of a synopsis. Tell me more.
I have to say, I really enjoyed Big Little Lies, particularly the first season.
I only saw the first season.
Yeah, I just found it sort of, you know, refreshing. You know, written by David E. Kelly, who we know from going back many, many years, different shows like The Practice, Picket Fences, Ally McBeal. And I think that he's well-versed in a courtroom drama. And I think that he does write women well. Mm. And I did find, you know, that tale of a fairly tight-knit community in Big Little Lies that all begins to unravel quite compelling.
Yep.
I'm afraid that I think that this is a dud.
that was a big build-up. Yeah, I didn't know which way you were going to turn on this, but okay.
And yet I think it works as soap opera. I'm going to give it that, because now I am desperate to know how the story does unfold. But aside from that, I think that the dialogue is awful. I think Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant both can be strong actors, particularly when they play against type. I don't think they're I don't think they are particularly playing against type here. Hugh Grant in particular, it feels like it's sort of one of those tonally confusing shows where he seems to think at the beginning anyway that he's cast in a rom-com. And
he's got some form in that area.
Yeah. And then I think sort of, as I alluded to a little bit, I think it all starts to feel a lot like a kind of 90s erotic thriller, you know, which I think there's a place for, but sort of not really as ham-fistedly done as this. That said, so the three episodes are out and I'm going to watch the damn thing because I know it's going to take me through twists and turns and just, you know, goddamn tell me how the story ends.
You're going to see this one through. I mean, is that not doing its job then? You'll bitch and moan about it, but you'll watch it.
Exactly. It's hitting those marks for me. It's going to be a straight up hate watch for the rest of the season.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. We've been through a lot, the world of late. So yeah, just you get in there and you finish the undoing.
Maybe that's your undoing,
but keep going.
Yeah. I doubt that this one's going to come back for a second season. That's all I'll say. But I am going to stick this one out. It's Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant in Thriller, The Undoing, and it's out here on Foxtel and Binge.
So at the time of recording, we're right in the middle, I think, of NAIDOC Week, the local celebration of Indigenous culture here in Australia. So I'm coming to you from Cammeraygal land. It's, I live and work on Cammeraygal country. And we thought, why not? Good time to amplify some Indigenous content we've got at SBS On Demand in a segment where we always like to give a shout of something else you could be watching. What have you been watching at On Demand, Ben?
Yeah, I'm on Garigal country and NAIDOC Week was delayed, another sort of victim of the pandemic. Usually takes place in July but has been pushed into November this year. I wanted to just give a shout out to a couple of different shows. NITV are doing something very interesting. That's our Indigenous broadcaster that forms part of SBS. They're doing Big Mob Brekkie, a breakfast show all this week, brought to you live from Taronga Zoo. But, of course, you can catch up on that on SBS On Demand as well. Also, just a shout out to sort of a favourite. We're up to three seasons with one more coming in the new year, Going Places with Ernie Dingo. So just a great way to explore this beautiful country of ours and cross all the borders that currently you may not be able to cross at this present time. I'll just end with Warwick Thornton's The Beach, which we launched earlier this year. And we were talking about mood and a series that immerse you in feeling and emotion with who we are, And The Beach is very much in that same mold with Warwick Thornton alone, isolated in a shack, dealing with his inner demons. And the occasional sort of visit from a black dog. You probably understand the motif there. But, yeah, it was incredibly successful when we aired it earlier in the year. And if you haven't seen it, or even if you have, it's worth a revisit.
Yeah, no, and a good shout on that one. Yeah, for sure. Well, I was also going to mention Big Mob Brekkie. We didn't confer ahead of time, so thanks for giving that a bump. Yeah, it's just a week-long series we're doing of breakfast television. Makes a point of difference from, you know, your cash cows and whatnot. So so do catch that at On Demand.
The week's not over yet. Cash cows may be in the cards for future episodes.
Shouldn't speak too soon. Yes, quite right. but no, one doco that I wanted to give a shout out to was Looky Looky, Here Comes Cookie. We mentioned that NAIDOC Week had to get pushed back because of the pandemic this year. But equally, and I'm choose my words carefully, it's not a positive but because of the pandemic, but this year does mark the 250th anniversary of James Cook and the arrival here. And I'm very confident that if we weren't all retreated to our homes and if it was a normal year, I think there would have been a lot of celebrations of that fact in culture. So, you know, we didn't get that this year, but we do have this documentary that was produced by NITV, starring Stephen Oliver, playwright, comedian, raconteur. Mm. He's a multi-hyphenate. And this examines the Cook myth, the history, and really just puts a black perspective on what has become legend of the history of Australia. And it just, you know, pokes a few holes in that with some facts and some suggestions and some humour and some music. Yeah, it's hard to describe, but it's, yeah, kind of a all-encompassing look at, maybe you don't really believe everything you read in the history books. There's a whole, you know, a lot more to learn about this, what happened 250 years ago. And, you know, if I think a lot of those events had taken place, it, you know, would have probably exacerbated a lot of the pain that Indigenous Australians feel about colonisation. You know, we're not there yet in the way we talk about that as a country. And Stephen Oliver wants to have a conversation, and I think it's, yeah, really frank and at times funny and, yeah, absolutely worth a look at SBS On Demand, and it's called Looky Looky, Here Comes Cookie.
Yeah, great. Well, I think that brings us to the end of another big show. So make sure you subscribe to SBS The Playlist wherever you get your podcasts and give us a lot of stars and leave us a nice review because it helps people to find us. And you can let us know what you thought of the movies and TV shows we discussed on Facebook or Twitter at SBS Movies. And I'm on Twitter at Ben Nguyen TV.
And I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
And The Playlist is produced by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next time.
Thanks for listening.